Good morning and welcome to the programme. Today, a weekend of bombardment and broken promises. We'll hear from Ukraine. Tightening the sanctions squeeze on Vladimir Putin, but does the man known as his number one foreign enemy think we're doing enough? Bill Browder will join us. Plus, putting farmers on a war footing to battle food insecurity and a convoy of aid heading from Cork to help those fleeing the fighting. We'll hear the story of one family spread across Europe, in Ireland, on the Slovakia Ukraine border and in a maternity hospital in Kharkiv. Also today, clinical child psychologist Dr. David Coleman will be here to answer your questions. Today, we'll talk about TikTok, crying at Shrek and toddlers who don't sleep. Text us this morning, 51551. Email today, cb@rte.ie, or on Twitter, we are at Today with Claire. First, negotiations are ongoing to establish new humanitarian corridors in Ukraine for people to escape towns and cities that are under intense bombardment by Russian forces. But over the weekend, many of you will have seen shocking images of the casualties and the devastation caused by shelling of the town of Irpin on the outskirts of Kyiv as people tried to escape through what they thought was a safe passage. I'm joined first by Isabel Koshu, BuzzFeed news reporter, who spoke to people outside Irpin after they had fled the bombs. Thanks for joining us, Isabel. Can you tell us first how those people were, what they were saying to you and where they were planning on going?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So we arrived on the sort of other end of the bridge. So the bridge coming from Irpin into Kyiv. And we met maybe around 200 evacuees. They were completely shell-shocked and completely devastated. They only had a few carrier bags with them, and most of them had been hiding in their basements or in their flats for, you know, several days on end, some of them more than a week. And they just heard about the evacuation, and this was the first time they'd left their houses and or their basements in all that time. I've never met people in that kind of shock before. They then had to leave the houses, and under shelling and more bombardment, it tried to evacuate. And as you've seen in the images, several people died in the process of trying to evacuate.
Yeah, I just want to ask you about that, because this was a humanitarian corridor. You were meeting these people who were told and who believed it was safe for them to evacuate. But then people around the world saw that photograph, really distressing picture of the young family killed in the shelling as they were trying to leave with their suitcases around them. There was a pet carrier lying on the street beside their bodies. These people and the people that you met, they believed that it was a safe time for them to get out of the town, didn't they?
Absolutely. That's what had been arranged, as far as I understand. But I can confirm that it wasn't. So while I was stood there taking these interviews and I was listening back to my recordings afterwards, the shelling was constant. There was one mother who we met who had torn up sort of a white bed sheet and tied it around her child's neck, her child and then her nieces and nephews, so that she said that she was afraid of Russian snipers and she wanted to make sure that they didn't target her children as they were crossing the bridge. I mean, that's the level of fear that people were facing.
I mean, the shock that you spoke about, I'm sure not due only just to having to stay in hiding in these basements, but also coming under fire when you were told it was safe to leave.
And that was another thing. So once they got to the other side of the bridge, you know, we could still hear the bombing from where we were, and they were just desperate to get on the bus to get to the next destination. I mean, a lot of them were saying that, you know, we don't have anywhere to go. We haven't made any plans. That's what we're trying to do now. And that's another thing to bear in mind, is that a lot of them didn't have any access to internet or any phone connection for several days on end. So, there was one guy who just shouted at me, you know, what he saw my vest with press on it. And he said, what's the news? What's happening? We haven't had any news for days. So, you know, they were just trying to, like, get their senses back, basically, because they'd essentially been shut away in darkness.
Mm-hmm. I heard another reporter this morning saying that the press vest and the markings on your vest, that it feels meaningless now. Do you feel under threat?
I mean, I certainly feel under threat from Russian forces, from what I've been seeing and the stories that I've heard from colleagues and the images that I've seen. They don't seem to respect, you know, freedom of movement for the press at all. But I personally haven't been close enough, you know, to Russian forces to personally feel under threat. But certainly we're seeing a trend that, you know, members of the press are not respected, mm-hmm. and actually targeted.
And this morning you're around Kyiv, you're in the outskirts of Kyiv. Can you describe what's happening where you are now?
Sure, yeah. So, I mean, we have heard shelling this morning, which we think is coming from the from an airport relatively nearby, but not too close. Again, there's just lots of people. We saw yesterday coming back, lots of people evacuating, lots of people trying to leave to go to other places in Western Ukraine mostly. And that's the kind of atmosphere that people are just really scared and they don't know what's going to come next. Because as you've probably seen, lots of different places are being targeted. It doesn't feel like anywhere safe. You know, mm-hmm. Some places are being targeted for military reasons and others, it just seems to terrorize the population.
And Isabel, you said earlier that people in Irpin certainly didn't have access to the internet. The ones that who you met, do they have any idea of the scale of the war around Ukraine?
So I think that they did have access for the first few days. So I think they did have it, but they just didn't know. They certainly weren't aware that certain cities had been taken, like, as you know, has happened in the last sort of 3-4 days, major cities in the south have been occupied. And they obviously didn't know about the resistance process as well that had been happening there. So, they were shocked, but they were taking everything in at once. You know, they couldn't quite grasp what I was telling them at the same time. They were, you know, just too devastated.
Mm-hmm. There are commitments again this morning from Russia to open these humanitarian corridors. But given the situation over the weekend, it's unlikely, I would imagine, and tell me what you think, that people will trust that these humanitarian corridors will be respected today.
I mean, I agree. I think it's going to be very increasingly difficult for people to trust. But I think people are so desperate that they will try anyway. People are desperate to get outside of their houses. You know, being under that kind of shelling, that kind of bombardment for so many days is, you know, is people feel like, well, if we stay, we might die anyway. So I think people will still try it. That was my impression.
Yeah, because what choice do they have?
Yes, exactly.
BuzzFeed's report overnight, which I was reading, there was one woman quoted there, Tatiana. She's escaping Irpin, where you were, and she said half of her family is in Russia. They're phoning her and saying, don't worry, tomorrow you will be part of Russia, which is a remarkable thing to be told in these circumstances, isn't it?
It is remarkable, but I meet a lot of families all the time who have relatives in Russia, and they all say the same things. I mean, essentially, Russian propaganda is portraying this as Russia is saving Ukraine, whereas most people in Ukraine feel that Russia is, in fact, trying to kill Ukraine as a state. So it is a remarkable thing to say, but this propaganda has been developing over a period of almost 10 years now in Russia. Mm-hmm. And so it is an alternative reality and it's very, very difficult for Ukrainians to understand.
Isabel, thank you very much for talking to us this morning. Isabel Koshu, BuzzFeed news reporter in Ukraine. And this morning, Isabel is just on the outskirts of Kyiv. Isabel, look after yourself. Thank you.
Thanks.
Well, Ukrainian MP and chair of the Irish-Ukrainian friendship group, Sviatoslav Yurash, has been in the centre of the attacks in Irpin, where there has been criticism of the disregard for civilian lives as shelling claimed the lives of local people there. And Sviatoslav joins us on the line from Kyiv now. It's good to talk to you again, Sviatoslav. As I said, you were in Irpin over the weekend. Will you describe the events over the last couple of days there?
Well, in Irpin, it's very obvious that Russians are trying to cut out our supply lines to the West, and they're willing to pay any price in civilian lives to make that happen. So they are killing and pushing into the town. I mean, the sight that is and the reality of Irpin now is indescribable. This was a quiet town, a nice town, suburbia for Kyiv, if you would like to put it that way. And the point is this is no more, basically. The town is turning into hell fast. So the point is, I mean, there was everything and anything from individual situations. Like I had to take a dog because their owner was just killed. And basically the choice there was to shoot the dog or get the dog. And I got the dog and saved it from Irpin, basically, mm-hmm. to the just scores of refugees going to Kyiv railway station to leave Kyiv as fast as possible. These are women, children, elderly, infirm. any number of people who truly have not seen this coming, to say the least.
We've been speaking since the very beginning of this, over 2 weeks ago now. And at the beginning, you were working in anticipation of fighting in a war. Now you have seen people being shelled in that town over the weekend. You've taken that dog. You see people trying to flee. You see people being shot at as they're trying to flee and being shelled. Do you feel now as though you're in the middle of war?
This is the biggest military invasion since the Second World War. This is basically Russia attacking us from all the sides, trying to destroy our statehood. So it's not just conjecture. You just watch Mr. Putin's hour-long speech that he gave less than a week before the actual invasion started. He makes that point very clearly. He doesn't truly believe there's such a thing as Ukrainian nation. There's such a thing as Ukrainian state. We are determined to prove him wrong and to tell him and show him that our nation does exist and wants to have a future. So that's what we are fighting for. And our ancestors were devoting all their lives to the same goal. So we're going to continue the tradition, and we will show to the world and to Mr. Putin that our nation is and will be here.
But how is morale amongst your friends, your family, your fellow fighters now as this extends past the second week?
We are battling for our nation's existence, for our survival as a state. So our morale is not limited by any any details. We will fight till the very end because we have nowhere else to go. This is our country. And this is the place where we shall make a stand. A stand to show the world.
I think over the weekend, everybody around the world was really shocked when those humanitarian corridors collapsed on two occasions. Now, we're hearing this morning that they're going to be reinstated, but do people trust that they'll be respected?
They did not collapse. They were shelled by the Russians. We basically, those negotiations that we had with the Russians, didn't agree on much, but we could try and find some understanding on need to take the civilians, elderly, infirm, children out of the cities. And Russians have shelled these corridors every single time. Again, Russians have lied, are lying, and will be lying in the future. So we are, again, we are just showing the world with this effort that, again, for us, the priority is to save lives. And again, to Russians, nothing is sacred.
But what are you saying to people, you and your colleagues? Are you asking them to beware of availing of these humanitarian corridors or to still try and make their escape if they can?
We're discussing all options, including trying to help escort, trying to help defend these corridors. But the point here is that, again, those people caught in the crossfire that you see on those images that are flying over the internet are in dire need of help. And we are trying to help them out, to let them leave the battlefield.
Mm-hmm. Isabel was talking to me earlier, she's a reporter with BuzzFeed, saying that people have no choice but to avail of these corridors, even if they don't trust that they'll be maintained by Russian forces. How worried are you that there will be more civilian casualties in the coming days?
Russia has clearly shown utter disregard for civilian casualties. So, unfortunately, especially with no-fly zone that can be opposed by the West at any moment it wishes, that is very much a certainty there will be more civilian casualties. I shudder to imagine how many.
Are you hearing that Moscow offered these humanitarian corridors, but that they would lead to Belarus and on to Russia?
Moscow can play any games it wishes, but the whole of the world sees right now what Moscow's really about. When they see those dead children, those destroyed residential buildings, that destruction and what is doing all over Ukraine. So no matter what Moscow says, it does the opposite.
Yeah, I'm just seeing a Wires report that your own deputy prime minister has rejected this offer of humanitarian corridors on the basis that what Russia is saying is if you want to escape, you go to Belarus and then on to Russia. Would you expect that desperate people will avail of those routes, though?
I truly, it's hard to really conduct this in organized fashion right now. With the battles raging all over Kyiv, all around Kyiv, it's very hard to say exactly what will happen. People are trying to flee, especially those people that have no ability to truly defend themselves. And what's going to happen is unfortunately, a mystery for all.
And in the last while, President Zelensky has again asked for more military aircraft from the international community. How urgently do you need that kind of equipment?
as urgently as need be, because the point is nothing is enough, nothing is too much, and everything is very much wanted. As far as aircraft is concerned, again, if the West is unwilling or unready to impose the no-fly zone, we are happy to impose that ourselves. Our air force is not as large as the Russians, but we have shown remarkable success in destroying and defending our airspace. And if given more of an instruments to do that, we will continue doing that very successfully.
I'm sure you and your colleagues, along with experts all over the world, are trying to figure out what's going to happen next, particularly in Kyiv, where you are. What are you expecting in the coming days?
We expect the city to prepare for defense and defend with everything it has against whatever Russians throw at us, because it is our capital and we will make a stand here. And if the Russians mobilize 2.5 million of their reserves and throw it into Kyiv, we shall make it their Stalingrad, because, again, this is our capital. We aren't going to leave it to the Russian whims.
What are you doing on a day-to-day basis? I know you're helping people, but what does that mean in reality?
Fighting, helping, informing. I mean, talking with you, delivering various humanitarian aid, various military aid, various weapons, vests, helmets, thermal imagers, as well as going to different parts of the battlefield around Kyiv and trying to become less of a rudimentary soldier than I am at the moment.
Mm-hmm. I saw a picture of that dog you have claimed over the weekend. He's a big guy.
Yes, he certainly is. It's a matter of, again, trying to not forget humanity in all of this madness.
Sviatoslav, it's good to talk to you. Sviatoslav Juras,
same here.
Ukraine MP.
Same here.
Do take care, and I hope we talk again soon. Let's take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.